Ready?
Oh, I'm never ready, but I'll pretend like I am.
Hi, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Beth. Welcome to Thief Steals the Podcast.
Where I steal the podcast.
And I steal it back.
Okie dokies. Today we are talking about one of my favourites, episode 6, season 5, the DB Cooper job. Beth, what did you think?
I fucking loved this episode. It was so dumb. In like the best way. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that this is the route they took with this. I think it's a really fun take on like a true crime scenario. I love when we get like a flashback, different time period situation. I love when we kind of get to see our characters, or like rather the actors, like putting on different hats, as it were, other than Nate. You know,
but he literally did put on a different hat this week.
He did, because he was playing the character, see?
He was, you're right.
But my theory knows no bounds. But no, I really liked it. Although I will say that the moment that he and Steve were sitting at that kitchen table and they were like chatting or whatever, and we were getting that little bit about Steve's background, I was like, Steve is fucking DB. Like, I was like, I have a note that's literally like, Steve is DB Cooper. And then another note that says, or is that a red herring? Like, it looks like he's suspicious. He seems suspicious. And then by the end of the episode, I was like, oh, I was right. And then my note says, Steve is DB Cooper. I suspected him when he was introduced, but I thought it was too obvious.
Yeah.
So
But no, he was DB Cooper.
Yeah.
I think it's so funny. They were like, let's take this. Like, you know, because it is, like, it's a real-life unsolved mystery. It has been unsolved since the 70s when it happened.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, we're going to make it this one random dude. They were like, we're going to create our OC who's going to be DB Cooper. Like, we're just going to...
They literally wrote DB Cooper fan fiction.
Exactly.
That's so funny. It's a DB Cooper true crime cross-leverage fanfic.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's so funny.
Mm-hmm. I find it so fun, and I love the implications at the start of the episode that, yes, in fact, Sophie did have a DB Cooper poster in her bedroom when she was like 15.
Literally, Sophie fangirling is so funny and so relatable. I love that for her. It's beautiful. But I also just love, I fucking adore that the way that they introduced this case is McSweeten being like, my dad was this, you know, this great respected agent, except for the one that got away. And I was like, oh my God. Well, I mean, the title of the episode is DB Cooper. So you're like, okay, it's going to be DB Cooper.
Yeah.
But it's so
funny. If you
didn't
know the title of the episode going in.
Yeah. It's so funny when he's like, yeah, the one that got away was DB fucking Cooper. And that's going to tarnish my dad's reputation. I'm like, baby, I don't think anyone blames him for not catching DB Cooper. Like, the man was notoriously very fucking hard to catch. That's like being like, my dad, who used to make handcuffs for a living, his whole reputation was soiled by Harry Houdini, who managed to get out of his handcuffs. Like, yeah, he was pretty famous for being able to get out of handcuffs.
Like, it's like, okay, babe.
It's okay. We'll let this one slide.
Were you expecting just a whole bunch of exposition about a side character backstory today?
No, I wasn't. But you know
what? Did you love it?
I did. I have a note that says that it's really, like, interesting and kind of different to see... Actually, I said it's wild seeing McSweeten not being just a big lovable doofus.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm so used to him being, like, the comic relief. Like, to the point where I didn't actually recognize him this episode. Like, I knew his name. But, like, the energy that he brought was just... And obviously, like, it's a different... scenario.
It's a very different context than normally when we see it.
Yeah, exactly. But I was like, wow, like the energy here is so shifted. It was really interesting. One thing I did miss though, one thing I did miss was that we didn't get some fucking weird explanation as to where Taggart was. Because like last time he was like fighting, he was doing some kind of martial arts, and there was also like a ferret involved somehow recently. And
so we had two explanations recently.
Yeah.
One was he was teaching Krav Maga at Quantico. And then the other one was that he'd been bitten by a ferret.
Yeah, right? Mm. And so I was like, I have a note. My top three notes.
Yeah.
Right? Fidelity, bravery, integrity. Okay, I see you. I was like, wow, okay, what a way to sneak FBI into your name a second time somehow. It's just like FBI in parentheses, FBI. Like, okay. and then I was like, wait, FBI? And then I did a little side eye emoji. And then I wrote, my faves? And then my next note is just McSweeten in all caps. And then, so when is Taggart's excuse going to show up? But then his excuse never showed up. So sad.
I think maybe that's because this time it's not like an FBI
thing.
Like every time we've seen McSweeten up to this point, it has been like he's been on a case and like they've run into him because he's on a case and they're on the same case. And so they run into each other.
Yeah.
Whereas this time it's like, no, McSweeten has specifically sought out Parker or Agent Hagen.
Yeah.
As he still knows her.
Yeah.
Like.
So funny.
Unironically.
Do you know what is so interesting actually about this episode? It's like, obviously the whole premise is like, we have it come up a lot, where it's this concept that even the people who are committing the crimes, you know, you have to look, you know, beyond that and see the circumstance and understand where they're coming from, right? And I think that in and of itself is a very, very interesting perspective to take. And I do think it's important because, you know, and I won't go on about it too long, but like from like a social like perspective, people don't just commit crimes for no reason. Yeah. Like there will be a reason, regardless of how, you know, good, I suppose, that reason is, there will always be a reason. And so like it is well worth understanding the perspective and knowing what their reasoning was for committing the crime, you know. Anyway, not going to get too far into that. That's not the point of the podcast. But it is worth understanding the perspective that they had, even if you cannot agree or understand it from like a personal perspective. It's important to be able to look at their perspective and be like, okay, these are the motivations. What I thought was really, really interesting was that the sort of pinnacle point of the episode is that Steve is D.B. Cooper. And so...
I thought you were going to say it was the knee slide over the car.
Oh, I'll get there. I will get there. I have thoughts on that. But the pinnacle point of the episode is that Steve is D.B. Cooper, right? Mm. And I thought it was so interesting to frame it as McSweeten's dad is working with this partner for so long and he thinks he knows everything and he thinks they're on the same team and he thinks he can trust them and like all this stuff. And then when his dad is on his deathbed and he's trying to like, you know, clear his name of like, you know, this one transgression sort of thing, he goes to Parker, who is the Steve equivalent.
Yeah.
Because he thinks that they are on the same team and he thinks he knows who Parker is and he thinks he understands everything and he just doesn't. And I was like, that is so interesting. And I don't know if it was an intended parallel.
That's parallel.
But I love it. I'm just like... The fact that both father and son, because again, this episode is a lot about like the dynamics of parenting and stuff and the daddy issues. Oh my God, Nate and Parker's like parental issues are so interesting this episode.
They pop right up.
They really do be popping. And so for me, like watching these two men ultimately seeking help from people who do nothing but deceive them to their face, but are ultimately... like good people, as you know, so like
regardless of the deceit, they still do actually genuinely want the best for them.
Yeah, and so it's like Parker is not going into these things to deceive McSweeten specifically. Yeah. She never like went into it being like, I'm gonna fuck this guy over. It's just that she was like, well, here are my options, you know, and it just happened that they just keep running into this guy. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Steve, it was just like, well, he needed a job. And, you know, like there's, you know, the conversation between him and Stephanie where she's saying, like, I think you have to take it because that puts you at the front and center of the investigation, you know. And so.
So at the very least, you'll get a heads up when they work out it's you. Like.
Yeah, exactly. If they're going to work out it's you. Or you can like bury leads if need be, like, you know, that kind of thing. And so it was really, really interesting, I think, just a comparison between the way that McSweeten Senior interacts with Steve and the way that McSweeten Jr. interacts with Parker. And it's like same, but different.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's so interesting from like a character analysis kind of perspective.
And it's also interesting because I think it's like, at least for me, I've always read it as it's implied that McSweeten Senior, at least by the time of his death, knew that Steve was D.B. Cooper.
Really?
Like, I think it's implied that he... Personally, for me, I reckon he works it out when he meets when he meets Steve as Steve.
Okay.
Like, I think that's when it sort of clicks into place. And whether he knows or not, I think he certainly has his suspicions.
Because I thought that the way that that scene was played, that I thought that he was suspicious of Steve from the get-go.
Yeah.
And so then, but then sort of the rest of the plot of it, I guess, doesn't make that much sense if that was the case.
I think... It's meant to, like, the way I've always read it was he's found D.B. Cooper He recognizes it's DB Cooper and he understands there are two ways he can go. He can treat him with compassion. And that's why he offers him the job, because he understands that, you know, DB Cooper's not some monster that's irredeemable.
Yeah.
But he understands that if he comes forward and proves that Steve is DB Cooper,
he'll be arrested.
He'll be arrested and treated as if he's some sort of irredeemable monster.
Yeah.
So he makes the decision
to go for the first option. I suppose that's a really interesting way of looking at it. And it does fall in line with the characterization. Yeah. My only thing then, though, would be like, okay, but then why do they keep on the DB Cooper case? Like,
you... Well, how do you explain just suddenly not being on the DB Cooper case?
Well, I suppose you could say, well, we have literally not had any leads in 3 years. And the most likely scenario is the guy died, which is basically...
Which is what happens
in real life,
but,
you know.
But that's also what happens in this episode, because by the time that, you know, that money comes up, they're like, oh, well, that's all the leads.
Well,
like,
exactly. That's my point.
And they dust their hands of it.
So that's kind of what I'm saying, though. Like, I feel like it doesn't make sense for them to keep on the case so aggressively if they're sort of both of this kind of understanding that they both know who DB Cooper is, even if they don't share with each other.
I don't think Steve knows explicitly. That McSweet and Senior knows, though.
Yeah, no. But you know what I mean? Like, because he doesn't have any... Like, if McSweet and Senior had said, hey, look, man, I think we got to put this to bed for a minute, you know? Like, I feel like then, you know, Steve would have license to be like, yeah, like, I get it. I think, you know, me too. I think that too. And, like, they could move on. And to be fair, it's not like they're not solving other crimes, because we get...
The montage.
Maybe my favorite montage in all of Leverage. It is flawless.
Something about slapping a mustache on that man.
I did have a note from when they're in the woods and they're like looking for the money. And I was like, why the fuck are Steve and McSweet and Senior out here looking like Holmes and Watson? Like, what is happening?
But no, they just slap a mustache on him. And okay, so Elliot's hair normally does not read as 1970s, or at least not that 1970s.
No.
But you whack the mutton chops and mustache on that man,
and all of a sudden you're like, whoa.
It's the 70s. Like, it's transported you back. Like, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. That man is from the 70s. Like,
yes.
There's no other explanation for that combo.
No, not at all. But yeah, the fucking crime busts, the car slide. The car slide is potentially my favorite thing I've ever seen on Leverage.
We get it twice.
That's because it's so good. I was not disappointed to get it a second time. You know the rage that I had through the early seasons every fucking time I had to watch that bloody flashback of Nate's kid dying? Okay, I have the opposite emotion seeing the knee slide. I would have watched that 12 times and I would have been like, that's excellent every fucking time. This is what that stupid fucking knee slide with the guns and the lube should have been. It's just so good. And it makes sense and it looks great and it's the perfect level of camp, but also like actually just like, you know, a normal like fine choreography thing to do. Like, it's just fun and it looks great. And the way they've timed it so that Elliot's sliding across the hood of the car at the same time that Nate's opening the door and then they like pick up the chase. It's just so good.
And it's a nice little like, it's a nice setup for the punchline of like McSweeten didn't know how to drive. Like,
yeah.
It's like he pulled up too far, so he had to go over the car. What gets me though is the fucking scene where like it's the, you know, the drug deal or whatever, and he goes to like, you know, snort the coke or whatever to taste to make sure it's pure. Yeah. And he comes out and he's like, police, arrest, like you're arrest, like, you are under arrest, blah blah blah, and he shoots. And then he's like, oh, he's also a psychopath. Like, that fucking kills me every time.
It's so funny.
There is something about this sequence that's just like, oh, that's ripped straight out of a 70s cop show.
Oh, it's just fun.
Like, I really do enjoy the genre choice they made of that. Like, they didn't have to go that far into it, but, like, something about, like, the way they've colored the scenes and the costuming and, like...
They went hard on the retro aspects of this episode, and I fucking adore it. I thought it was really fun. It was just such a delight to watch. And, like, look, obviously, it goes without saying, like, ACAB. But, like, we'll let these fictional... this one fictional cop we'll let slide for a day because, like, yeah, the way that it was run was just so fun. And, like, I think that he was just such a good character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this episode would have been so much worse if they decided to go, there's this trope in, like, cop TV shows and cop movies where it's like, you know, the one renegade cop who knows better.
Breaks all the rules. But he gets results. Shut the fuck up.
I do enjoy, though, that this episode, they do center around McSween Sr., who is a cop, who follows all the rules, and who also has this deep underlying compassion for the people that he serves.
Yeah.
Which is so rare in cop media.
Yeah.
That I think, you know, it's a real shame because this is the sort of thing that is not reality. There are not people in positions of power within these organizations to treat both victims and suspects with that sense of, like, compassion and respect. And not all of the problems with the police would be solved if that was the case. But, like, as a big issue with cops is they do not treat people with compassion or respect.
Yeah, I obviously it's like broad strokes generalizations, and like this is an American show, and we aren't American, and there's a lot of differences between our policing systems and the way that our police officers are trained, and you know bits and pieces, you know, for example, guns.
Yeah,
this is different, but you know it is interesting to sort of like you say, like have this view where it's less of like, he doesn't play by the rules and that's what gets results. Like, he's playing by the rules and, like, he's actually going out of his way to listen to the victims and actually get their full story and understand what's happening, and then also doing the same with the criminals and their background and using that to his advantage to get better results than he would have otherwise.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really interesting. And I quite liked his little speech where he was saying, like, if there's one thing that I could leave you with, it is that you should also be compassionate. And like, I think that empathy is really undervalued as a skill in not just the justice sort of system, but like in most areas. I think that it's something that a lot of people, undervalue. You are not always be able to understand someone else's perspective, but it kind of falls in line really nicely with the previous episode and the whole thing of that politics and it just being like, it is not as simple as we should do this, we should not do this. And I think that this episode complements that sort of discussion. And it, again, like I said, this is American media and we're Australian, and there are lots of significant differences in the relationship between the public and police officers in each country. And also, like, beyond that, like, we are white Australians, which is a whole other thing. So I think that, honestly, I feel like maybe we're not really in a position to have much of a
opinion on this.
Well, I mean, an opinion, but like, we're not the voices that matter most, I think is the point. And so I definitely think it is interesting that this is the way that they decided to go. And it is refreshing. Like, the thing for me is that it is refreshing that they don't make it like the guy who breaks the rules and doesn't go by the book is the one who's doing the great things. Because I think that is what frustrates me significantly, is it's just like, okay, but like, we have these rules and regulations for a fucking reason, and a lot of them are ethical reasons. And so if you go around being like, oh well, I don't care about the ethics, haha, and then you show that person winning, I think that that is I have a problem with that. But anyway,
more importantly, how do you feel about the wedding pictures of bloody Elliot and Parker?
What, watching Elliot and Parker interact like a couple was fucking wild. I didn't like it because I was just like, oh, that just feels
weird. Wrong. Like, I understand why they cast it the way they did.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But like, it also just feels really weird to me.
Yeah. Also, I missed having Hardison, like, because
I think Hardison does get the short end of the stick.
Yeah, he's really not in a lot. And and Sophie too actually is missing from a lot, which is a bit of a bummer. But I mean, we mentioned earlier, like, I loved the fucking 70s set and costuming. I love Tally Ho being like an ongoing line throughout. And I really loved, actually, I really, really loved the moment where McSweeten is talking to other McSweeten and you know, it's when his bike is gone. And his dad says, you wouldn't lose so many bikes, like, if you believed everyone, basically, at face value. And then little McSweeten says, yeah, but I wouldn't find any lost dogs either. And I was like, oh, I love that. Because, yeah, like, if you just assume the worst in everybody, then you're going to miss out on the good. If you assume the best in everybody, like, you might, you know,
you might
find
get hurt,
some. You might find some bad, but like, you'll also find some good, you know. And I like to believe that you'll find a lot more good than you'll find bad. So, yeah, I don't know. I really liked that. It made me a little bit emotional, actually. I just thought, I was like, oh, that's so sweet. And let's think about it coming from a kid.
I also just love, you know, how sweet young bloody
McSweeten
is. Like, he's just such a sweetie. Like, McSweeten really is just, like, the perfect embodiment of the name for him. Like,
yeah. I kind of want to know, though, did Nate organize him to show up at Steve's house in that last bit where Steve has the gun? Like,
you assume he must have?
Because otherwise he's just kind of fucking showed up.
I mean, otherwise he's just going to visit. Like, to be fair, they are really quite close. Like,
yeah.
Steve was his dad's partner for many, many years. I'm sure.
Uncle
Steve is what he calls him. So, like, maybe he just went to pop in to visit, but the timing's a little bit coincidental. So I'm assuming Nate probably probably invited him there. Otherwise, it's just the timing's a little bit interesting.
Yeah. Oh, also, I understand the, like, whole sort of route they went with the romance between Stephanie and DB Cooper. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how he just shows up at her house and then, like, they're like, hi, and then they kiss.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, this is giving no one in the writer's room has ever met an actual human woman. Which normally we reserve for supernatural.
Yeah.
Hilariously, that scene where she looks up and she sees him outside the window, that ripped straight from a supernatural episode. It's so funny because you were like, huh, it's like giving Sam lurking. And I was like, actually, it's giving Cass. I am obsessed. Mm. I'm obsessed.
You're obsessed. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think that's a first. I don't think you've been obsessed really with anything in Leverage. And I shouldn't be surprised that it comes from a supernatural reference within Leverage.
Look, do you know what else reminded me of supernatural this episode? When Nate is talking to McSweeten Sr. and they're like in the little lounge room and like it's, the room is getting darker and darker as they have the conversation. And I understand it's to sort of symbolize the passage of time. So you can tell that he's been there all day. And that's fine and whatever. But there is a fucking lamp in the room. And it is off. And it is so fucking dark in there. And I'm like, babes, turn on a damn lamp. What is this? Supernatural? Like, you can have lighting. It's okay. I was like, why are you just sitting there in the fucking dark? It's like, I will literally, like, I'll come here in the morning. Right? Yeah. And we'll record and we'll, like, I will be here. From, like, on a normal day, from, like, 8 a.m. to, like, 6 p.m. some days because we just fucking talk a lot. And then I'll go home and Naomi will be sitting in a room completely dark. She'll be doing a sketch or something. And I'm like, you know, you could turn a light on. And she's like, oh. Like, she's just gotten so involved in whatever she's doing that she's just not thought to get up and turn a light.
To be fair,
though. And she's like, wow.
Naomi is of the opinion that overhead lighting is enemy number one.
Yeah, that's true. And that's why we have 10,000 lamps. I came home yesterday, actually, at a work thing.
Did you buy more lamps?
No, I came home on, like, last night. And I got home at, I don't know, like 10:40, you know? And I couldn't find her. I finally found her. She's in the art studio, surrounded by candles. Sitting on the floor, painting her, like, you know, latest. And I was like, this is a vibe, but it's also giving seance. Like, it's giving ritual sacrifice.
What I will say
about
this episode is I had a point and then it completely, like, you know how you, like, start on your point and then it's like,
and then it falls out of your brain. Yeah. I mean, I have some points if you'd like me to go on.
You can de-sidetrack us if you'd like.
Amazing. Okay, I have one quick last point about Supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
I really think it's funny that they really, like we said before, this is literally DB Cooper Leverage fan fiction. Mm-hmm. And I love the way that they were like, let's take this actual real life figure and give him a little backstory and like explain away like a bunch of shit and just decide that we're going to arrest him. I think that would be fun. And then, you know, actually unarrest him. It was giving Supernatural and like this thing that Dean does that he's really proud of and brags about for like 3 episodes. If you know, you know. that is like, it gives a similar energy of like, hey, this historical figure, how about we just change a bunch of shit? Anyway, Jamie won't see that for a few more years, but...
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Good. The other thing that is not supernatural, I promise, is that I really like the shot of Nate when he's looking at the sketches up on the screens, and then you have, like, the reflection of Parker kind of superimposed over the top, and, like, it's kind of giving, like, you know, when you have, like, those like 80s like family portraits or whatever, and there's like the people, and then they've got like their cat's face like floating, like kind of semi-opaque kind of in the foreground.
Yeah.
Like it was giving that, but in a way I really liked and that I thought was really interesting, particularly given like Parker and Nate and their sort of like parental child relationship, and then like the parental child relationships we're seeing sort of elsewhere in the episode. I really enjoyed having them have that moment, and I actually really liked how that scene was played and shot and framed, and I thought it was really artistic is the only word I can think of.
Yeah, well, this is an episode that I think actually has like a startling amount of parallels in it, because obviously you pointed out, you know, the mix of senior and junior with their respective, not really partners, but criminal, people who have done criminal acts, who have deceived them about the criminal acts they've done. But you've also got the parallels between like McSweeten Sr. is a father and his son is following in his footsteps.
Yeah.
And that is not what he wants. And Nate is a father figure to Parker who is following in his footsteps, and not, that's not necessarily what he wants.
It's funny that, makes sense. It's funny that you say that, because I thought you were going to go down the Jimmy route just then. And like they even name drop, like they bring up Jimmy, like Nate says to Sophie, like, but he's not Jimmy Ford's son. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that is a really interesting thing for them to call attention to as well. And so I think there's actually like layers here. And it's like sort of breaking the cycle of familial trauma, I think, and like being like, I do not want my children to suffer the same ailments that I have suffered with, even though I know that they are going, like, I can see the cycle repeating and I want to stop it, but I don't know how.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think that's really interesting. And honestly, the conversation between Nate and Sophie at the end of this episode is just, like, further solidifying for me, like, my sort of retirement, or at least semi-retirement theory. Like, I like the idea that maybe when he says he wants to build something, I feel like there's a couple of different ways that could be interpreted. I feel like it is either, like, he wants to build like stability, like I feel like he wants to retire and build a life with Sophie, you know. I think that could be one interpretation. I think another interpretation could be that he wants to like instigate some kind of foundation or some sort of like scholarship situation to like continue to, because they've got so much fucking money, they don't know what to do with it. Like I feel like some sort of community, like a way to give back sort of thing. Like, I don't know if maybe he'll set up some sort of like fund to help cover medical debt, you know, to like on a Sam, or like, cause also like Nate has an actual biological son.
Yes.
You know, I assume that all of this talk of parenthood and stuff is probably bringing that up for him quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so I can understand him by the end of the episode, sitting down, talking to Sophie, you know, thinking about his own legacy and giving Hamilton, you know, and what he wants his family's legacy to be, and whether or not he would want to set something up in Sam's name. I think like it wouldn't be out of character, I don't think. And so I feel like there's a couple of different ways you can interpret it, but all of them kind of roll back around to like my general theory, which is Nate is looking to retire in some regard, you know, and especially like, obviously, this is an episode where it's kind of like passing the baton, like McSweeten Sr. passes away. And obviously, like McSweeten Jr. has like followed in the same footsteps in the sense of getting the same job or like doing the same kind of job role. And so like it would make sense that, you know, especially because Nate spends so much time with McSweeten Sr. And specifically the part as soon as they were like saying goodbye. And like, here's the thing, like he has pancreatic cancer. Of the cancers, you don't want pancreatic. Like, to be fair, you don't want cancer, full stop. But pancreatic
hot
is...
hot take.
Yeah, I know, spicy. Pancreatic is particularly brutal. It's not a great prognosis. So as soon as he shook Nate's hand and Nate was like, I'll see you tomorrow, and he was like, I'll be here, I was like, I don't think he will.
But will
like,
you, bro?
As soon as he said that, I was like, he's going to die. Yeah. Like, they're not going to... this will be the end of this character. And I was right. And I think that... I don't think that was a huge leap for me to make. I feel like that was maybe like relatively simple to, you know, assume.
It was set up within the premise of this episode, the potential that he could pass away.
Exactly. And I think with leverage, I think like I would not have been surprised if he lived to like see it out or whatever, because leverage is typically a more sort of like people rarely die, or people rarely don't sort of get to see the end, how it all turns out. But yeah, as soon as he said, I'll be here, I was like, no, he won't.
Yeah.
He's not going to live to another scene.
And I do think that is the correct storytelling choice here. Because I think if he had lived to see, you know, like Steve come out as D.B. Cooper in like kind of the light of day, what would have happened is the narrative shifts from being about what do we pass on to our children?
Mm-hmm.
And it shifts away from that to what is justice. It's no longer the important thing of McSweeten Jr. not, you know, throwing his life away, trying to chase a ghost, essentially. Like, at what point does it become about that versus about just seeing justice for this one case that, you know, went unsolved for all these years? And whether you read it as McSweeten Sr. knew or didn't, it doesn't really make a difference. What matters is if he had lived to see it, then the story as a narrative revolves around that justice rather than about the storytelling piece of he's gone, so what does McSweeten have left?
Yeah. Or rather, what does McSweeten... It's really hard because we only use their surnames really, but it becomes what is the McSweeten legacy for either of them?
Yeah.
Because like Nate sort of talks him around at the end and says like, you know, remember what your dad was all about. Your dad was all about the compassion. Your dad was all about seeing the bigger picture. Your dad was all about
seeing the best in people, even if it means you lose a bike.
Yeah, exactly. And you also have that quality.
Yeah.
And so I think that it really is about what is the more important value to you as an individual, but also to the legacy of the person you are hoping to respect, I suppose. Yeah. Like, I hesitate to say it's like a revenge mission, but it's more like he's doing it out of a sense of duty. Like, he's doing it for the sake of his dad's memory, for the sake of his dad's life struggle, right? And so it's like, ultimately, when it comes down to it, would your dad have preferred you to arrest his longest friend, essentially, one of his closest friends, and have him, you know, spend the rest of his life doing this, you know, incarcerated, essentially? Or would your dad prefer you to see the broader picture, to understand that it's more complicated than a black and white, he did a crime, therefore he deserves, you know? And so I think that, yeah, it becomes like, how, what is the best way to actually respect the person's memory and respect their wishes? What would they have actually wanted versus what do you want for them? And it's those are giving, two very different things sometimes.
It's giving, my son would have been ashamed of me if I was a murderer, but my dad would have bought me an ice cream.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
I also think it's really important on this point to like also remember the crime that they're fictionally solving is D.B. Cooper, which is ultimately a case where nobody got hurt.
Except probably D.B. Cooper. Except like in real, in reality, like, I don't think that man made it.
No, but it's really important to note like, okay, he hijacked a plane. He stressed a whole bunch of people out.
Yes, let's be real. The psychological damage is definitely there and valid.
But physically, he did not kill anyone. And it was, yes, a traumatic experience, but also like, it wasn't a traumatic experience that he put these people through over weeks. Like, it was like a couple of hours.
Acute.
It was acute. It was a single instance. And, you know, like the bomb never went off. He never took down any planes.
He got rid of all the civilians. Like,
it's essentially the same as like a bank robbery or something along those lines. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was
except just, for he had a better exit plan.
Yeah. It's certainly interesting. And I like the way they went with it. I still don't quite understand the sudden romance aspects. I didn't love it. And it was so weird seeing Parker and Elliot. I'm like, oh, I didn't. Like, it was fine. I think that the actors are very good.
They're very
good.
And,
like, the chemistry is believable. But I'm just like, oh, it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, because, like, every episode of Leverage, I look at them and I think, oh, they're like siblings.
Yeah.
Like, the sibling energy is so real for me that I really struggle to see anything romantic between them. So it is a wild time for me personally to see...
Yeah.
That interaction is romantic.
I think the other thing for me is, like, the last time I did an episode like this, it was the Van Gogh job.
Yeah.
And, like... the significant parallels and the deliberateness of the, like, Parker Hardison recasting in that episode. Like, so to have it done here, I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I mean, look.
It's a wild choice.
Here's the thing with, like, shipping and stuff. Like, people are, like, you know.
Live and let live.
Welcome to ship what they like. And I totally understand, like, if people are, like, into this as a pairing. Personally, like, I don't think it exists effectively within the narrative. Like, and I prefer, like, in my own shipping, like, I'm not the kind of person who ships people, random people who've never been on screen together or like I typically will ship characters who I feel like there is a narrative like backing for personally because I like to like if I'm engaging with fan works and stuff, I like it to be an extension of the existing work. Like I don't read crack fic very often, you know, kind of thing. That's just my personal take. But like, you know.
Except in the rare instances where I write it for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'll read whatever you fucking write because it's always a delight. But I think that this is, like, interesting as, like, an interpretation. But I was like, this is whack.
It feels
like,
so weird.
It was just so odd because we at this point, like, Parker and Hardison are so established as well. And, like, Hardison is barely in this episode, which is always a shame because, like, I love him. And I love Aldous Hodge, and I think that he's phenomenal. And so it's, like, it's always a shame when he's not very much, like, in the episode. But, yeah.
I will say, though, I do love that we get Air Hostess Parker again. Oh, Air Hostess Parker is, like, it's now technically a reoccurring bit, and I fucking love it. I adore it so much.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd call it a bit because, like, she's just playing a character. But, like, I do think it's fun that we've had Air Hostess Parker show up more than once.
It's like, if I had a nickel every time I saw Air Hostess Parker, I'd have two nickels, which isn't a lot, but it is weird that it happened twice.
Oh, one thing that I did want to note is that he had not only a bike on his Christmas wish list, which I just think is so funny, but also DB Cooper on his Christmas wish list. Like, way to know that your dad sucks at leaving work at work and in fact brings it home. Because holy shit. But it was very cute. Like, I think it was very silly. But I think it was really also quite funny. It actually is reminding me of yet another Supernatural episode. If you know, the one with the merch. the Christmas one with the merch, I think, is in the cold open.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, you will not believe when you see it because I did not believe when I saw it.
I do have a question for you specifically, though.
For me?
Yeah, it's like, it's not really, it's only tangentially related to this episode.
Love it, yeah.
Do we think we can technically count Elliot pretending to be DP Cooper in the flashbacks as micro-celebrity Elliot?
Oh, I think we should.
Okay.
That's so fun. I had not considered that, but yes, absolutely, because he was a micro-celebrity.
Yeah.
An anonymous micro-celebrity, but a micro-celebrity nonetheless. Yeah. Actually, honestly, probably beyond a micro-celebrity. DB Cooper is like...
folk legend.
Yeah, and it's also, like, international.
Yeah.
It's not just, like, when he's, like, a sporty dude or whatever, it's like people arguing about whether or not fucking the NFL or Taylor Swift is better known. It's like, babes, one of those things is internationally renowned. Like, sorry, it's not the NFL.
Looking, if you're looking at America specifically, maybe it has a chance. But if you're looking internationally...
no one gives a fucking flying fuck. That'd be
And
like,
especially not if you go from the NFL, a massive, large corporation...
To a singular individual.
To a single player like Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
If you go, okay, Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift... Taylor Swift every single goddamn time. Like, it's only when you widen it out to the entire NFL that she even has a chance of getting defeated. And even then, it's only in America.
I think the thing is, if you went to a random, like, if you went to, like, a random town and you held up a picture of Travis Kelce and said, can you name this man? And they, it, the odds are low. If you held up a picture of Taylor Swift and said, could you name this woman? She's a fucking household name. The only reason that Travis Kelce is a household name is because he's now theoretically dating Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I'm not going to comment on whether or not, you know.
He might be a household name in America, but he's not in any other country around the world.
If you care about the NFL. Yeah. Like,
I do want to say, though, I do love every time that the costume department gets to put them in different period clothing.
Yes.
It is great every time. That always killer. Like, I'm assuming, like, it's a TV show. They probably didn't have a very big budget. So the fact that they did all this, like... the tank top number when Parker as Stephanie answers the door, iconic. Like the striped tank top number, it's so 70s. I love it so much.
Okay. I want to know how much $200,000 is now worth. So $200,000 in 1971, and I'm assuming that this calculator is using AUD because I didn't ask for it to not. But honestly, that could also mean it's defaulting to the US dollar. So who fucking knows? $200,000 in 1971 is apparently worth about $1.5 million today.
Oh, so he at least did it for a decent chunk of change.
Yeah. So it's not a small amount of money. Because honestly, like, when I was watching the episode, I was like, $200,000. I was like, you've earned all this fucking effort and you're only asking for $200,000? And I was like, there's got to be, like, the inflation has got to account.
Yeah.
Because there is no way. Like, if I was going to pull that shit, I would be asking for in the millions. Like, I'm not doing it for 200 grand.
To be fair, though.
200 grand won't even buy you a fucking house.
To be fair, though, like, he wasn't really doing it for the money. Like,
no, he was doing it
for the money, but he wasn't doing it for the money for himself. Like, he was doing it so that he could support Daniel Cooper's family.
Yeah, exactly. Which, Also, I wanted to know, when they found, quote-unquote, D.B. Cooper and it was, like, the gravestone, my immediate thought, and you can, you know, back me up on this because I said it to you as we watched it, but I was like, oh, okay, well, like, the easiest identity to steal is the identity of someone who's already dead. Mm-hmm. Like, that comes... And I don't know, I mean, that from personal experience.
We've had an entire episode about it at this point.
We've had it... It comes up in, like, a bunch of... I used to watch Bones when I was a kid. I fucking loved it. And I remember it being a plot point there as well at some point. Like, I think because of Bones' family, which, you know, spoilers, but, you know, the show's old, so I assume if you're going to watch it, you probably already have. If you haven't, I haven't watched it in a while, but I'm pretty sure it's all right.
Yeah.
It probably hasn't aged amazing.
I mean, it's a cop show.
Yeah.
So, you know, all cop shows are kind of cop shows.
Yeah. It was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no. So I was like, oh, okay. So, like, he's taken the identity of this guy who died. Mm-hmm. And then, like, obviously, like, Nate puts the pieces together. Like, okay, it was the guy who was serving alongside him. Yeah. And then it, you know, very quickly kind of comes together. But, yeah, I was like, oh, okay, cool. I got that. And I was pretty proud of myself. But I do have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Who the fuck is Oliver Schmidt? Because that name gets dropped so many times.
He's nobody.
Oh, that's so
annoying. He is the fictional person they were meant to be going after this week until Parker drags McSweeten into the bar.
Oh, that's so annoying because they bring him up like 3 or 4 times and Nate's talking about this Ponzi scheme and he's talking about how, oh, I've been setting this up for months. And I'm like, oh, okay, so this will be plot relevant, right? This will come up in the next, like, this will be like the finale, like, because we're sort of, you know, a quarter of the way through the season now. Or actually a little over, more of a third. So I was like, you know, this will come up soon. This will be relevant.
It's just the person they were meant to be going after this week. I'm not going to say whether they go after him later or not. I'm just saying that is what we know so far. He was meant to be the person they were going after this week in Leverage. But then Parker dragged McSweeten home to the bar and they decided to take on D.B. Cooper instead.
Hilarious. I really hope that it does become relevant because if it doesn't, I'll be lightly annoyed. Only because they brought it up so many times. If Nate had brought it up just the once at the start of the episode, I'd be like, okay, I don't mind that being like just a general reference to Parker. We had other shit to do. But the fact that they name dropped, the fact that he talked about it being a Ponzi scheme and they did it multiple times, I'm like, and he referenced that he'd been working on it for months. I was like, if they now don't do it, I'll be like low-key annoyed. Because like, why bother? You know?
Look, I'm not allowed to say nothing. Okay. I'm mouth shut, not allowed to say jack shit all. Because, yeah, that's kind of the way this works. You did, in fact, sign up for this.
I know.
So, huh? I guess?
I love that you refuse to, like, gaslight me. You just go, I can't talk about that, and we move on, and I'll, like, fully just encourage and also blockage you simultaneously.
I am a better person, so...
Clearly.
It's not my fault.
One other thing that I did love that they did sort of sprinkle in is McSweeten Jr. being really impressed with all of Hardison's, like, tech and the, like, little quote being like, I asked the Bureau for a desk lamp 6 months ago. I was like, oh, I love that for you. That's so I work in a government agency corps. Like,
he's just, like, you know, he's very clearly, he's not a dumb character. I want to reiterate that.
No.
McSweeten is not dumb. He just is so gung-ho about seeing the best in people that it's like, there is very clearly something suspicious about Agent Hagen.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, like, she told me she was an agent. She keeps helping me. She keeps on helping me. She can't be, you know, a thief wanted in multiple jurisdictions. Like, yeah.
I personally think it would be really funny, and I doubt we're going to get it because, like, obviously this is the fifth and final season, and I'm assuming this is the last time we see McSweeten. Although I hope it's not because it does make me sad, and I was hoping to see Taggart again at least once more, especially because I don't reference him. But I think it would be really funny if at some point, like, we get to see McSweeten and Taggart or whatever. Like, they don't necessarily have to be significant in the episode, but, like, they get a hot tip or something about the crew. And so, like, they get a file with all of their, like, criminal records and, like, their mugshots or whatever. And they look at them and McSweeten just kind of, like, looks at Taggart, looks back down at the record, closes the file and puts it in the shredder. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like it would be fun for them to be like, oh, and then, like, not, or like to work with Sterling, like through Interpol. Like, I think it would be really fun for them to find out at some point. I just don't think we will get that.
I will obviously not yay or nay you. Yeah. I am impartial. I am not giving you any spoilers. What I will say though, this is not the last time we hear their names.
Oh, I hear their names.
Yeah.
Do we see their faces?
I'm not saying that. Okay. I'm not saying one thing or the other. Okay. I'm just saying we do at least get another mention of them. Like, they're not, you know, they, whether they're gone or not, they're never forgotten. You know what I mean?
I mean, they will never be forgotten. They will live in my heart forever. You know? But, all right.
Okay. I don't have anything else to add about this episode. Do you want to say anything else on this one?
Only that I really liked Elliot knowing all the technicalities of the parachutes at the very start. I thought that was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was fun. Mm-hmm. I also think it was interesting that they fully had the Odyssey of Homer so prevalent through the episode. Like, they not only showed the cover of the book really significantly and, like, made a point out of that as, like, with a shot, but then they, like, fully brought it up in conversation multiple times. And then at the end of the episode, like, McSweet gives it to Nate, and I was like, wow, in case anyone missed it, how about we bash you over the head
with
it?
They're not being subtle with this. No. This is...
Because they're like, there's a point we want you to take away, kids.
Yeah. They're not... They don't do a lot of subtle character work.
No.
So this is just to make sure that you understand that we are now looking at Nate's voyage and how far he's come and how he sees of himself within that voyage.
Yeah. See, this is what I'm saying. I'm so convinced that this season is ultimately going to be about Nate stepping back.
I'm not saying nothing.
I know, but I'm saying it.
Okay.
I'm allowed to. I'm allowed to express my opinion, Jamie. That's the point. No, I can say the shit that
that's
I want.
That's how... It may be how you run your podcast, but it's not how I run mine.
Wow. Here I was thinking that we were a fucking team. I thought they were our podcasts, but I guess I was wrong.
Actually, no, this works out way worse for me because I... Apologies if you really like this podcast. The Supernatural podcast is funnier. What can I say? It's a worse show. It's easier to be funny about it. It's
easier to rip it to shreds. Yeah. And also, the Supernatural, like... element of it, like the fact that it is like magic and shit, does allow for funnier conversations. Like, you really can't talk about the likelihood of Tom Holland being possessed by a demon increasing or decreasing his ability to do a backflip. You can't.
No,
that's just not the shit you can talk about in regards to leverage, but it's definitely a conversation we have had before. Yeah.
It's more like, this is how depressing the world is, and isn't it wow
that- ACAB and also fuck capitalism. But that's just like, yeah, we knew that.
Yeah. Anyway, I think I'm all done for the day. Are you all done for the day?
Yeah, I think I'm done
for the day. Okie dokie, how would you rate the DB Cooper job out of 5?
I gave him a 4.5.
I respect that.
I liked this episode. Good. I thought it was fun. The, like, let's sympathize with the cop thing was a little... but I think the thing is, with leverage, I will give it a pass on the basis that... So many of their other episodes are about the corruption and the inability of the police to do their job. And so I'm like, yes, ACAB.
Yeah.
However, I think in the broader context of Leverage as a show and the messaging they usually use, I am willing to let this one fictional character slide.
Especially because they do make a very specific point of this character is actually compassionate. Like, operating within a shit system, but is actually ultimately...
Trying to do the best. Yeah. And so...
Which is not often the case with cop shows. It's often the, you know, breaking the rules, but is better than everyone, so it's fine sort of trope.
Yeah. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. So, yes. So I will give it a slide based on the overall messaging of Leverage in general.
I will say I am, like, slightly surprised that you like it as much as you do, because this episode...
I know. I walked in today and you were like, I don't think you're going to like this episode. And I was like, damn, all right.
It is high camp. It is cheesy as hell. It is brilliant. I love it so much.
Do you know what it is, though? The difference is, because what I really struggle with, and what particularly the early episodes of Leverage I could not handle, was the secondhand embarrassment. Mm-hmm. This episode does not give me secondhand embarrassment. I don't think there's anything that happens in it that makes me uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But it is the secondhand embarrassment aspect that I fucking hate. That's why I detest the wedding job so much. Mm-hmm. Because the whole thing, I'm just sitting there going, ugh, cringing. I'm like, this is horrible and the worst, and I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
This... is just as camp and silly, but without that cringe secondhand embarrassment.
But element. I mean, we also don't get a shot of Elliot with flames all around him as he fights to the death with some random dude.
I literally cannot, like, unlink in my mind that scene and that fucking Elmo gif where he's just like, ah, you know, and there's all the flames.
Yeah.
That's in my mind. They are the same.
Okie dokies. Well, next week's episode is called The Real Fake Car Job. What do you think it's about?
The real fake car job. I mean, we've had dodgy car dealers before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I doubt that they're going to revisit that. We've also had the episode that I can't remember the name of, but it had Chrissy. Was it when Parker teaches her to...
That's the boost job. That's the dodgy car dealership ad.
Oh, it's the same one?
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought they were two different episodes. But, yeah.
And then we have all the car ads, just generally.
Just the general, advertisements within the episodes. Yeah. So, I doubt they're going to do that again. I wonder if... Because the other thing they could do is something similar to the one about the horses from way back when.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the two-horse job?
Yeah.
But... I mean, to be fair, I was going to say they maybe wouldn't run the same scheme, but we have seen them run basically the same schemes before, mm-hmm. so maybe they would. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's going to be some kind of similar
mm-hmm.
job to that, but obviously with a car in place of a horse.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be one of those little sort of plays on your expectations where, like, they're talking about a car and you feel like it's, like, you know, a really expensive, like, race car or something, you know. Oh, actually, thinking of, like, historical, like... ties. It could be that car that they have in that Supernatural episode, the one, the really famous one, Little Something.
Oh, the James Dean car.
Yeah, yeah, so like maybe it's something like that, like it's like a famous mm-hmm. car sort of thing, and they're like, oh, is like it a real or is it a fake
yeah.
kind of thing. Maybe they're like, maybe it's an auction sort mm-hmm. of situation.
Yeah.
It could also be like, maybe they think it's like a car like that and they show mm-hmm. up and it's actually like, you know, just a mint condition collectible Hot Wheels, you know yeah. what I mean? Like, so maybe they're trying to subvert
mm-hmm.
something there, but by saying the real fake,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's a lot of different directions they could go with it, honestly. I'm assuming it'll have something to do with a car. That's my big
hot take. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that's okay. Well, then on that note,
yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you want to find us at all, you can find us on so many different various social media platforms. We are, in fact, terminally online. You can talk to us about literally anything, but suggested conversation topics do include...
Oh, I don't really know for this one.
What would be on your Christmas list?
Oh my God, yeah.
Would you put D.B. Cooper on there?
Will this episode be out around Christmas?
Probably not.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it depends on how many backlogs we've got. Anyway, point
is... We've got like a dozen backlogs. Yeah. It's going to be out like mid-Feb.
Oh, okay. What true crime, like unsolved mystery, do you have an unhealthy obsession with? Because yeah. I love a good true crime.
Like, what's yours then?
I don't know. There are so many like interesting ones. I think there are some really good like Australian mm-hmm. ones that
I know
like,
what mine is.
Yeah.
The Beaumont Children.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
So see, my mum was really obsessed with them when I was growing up, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah. Well, there's also the other one that I always think of is the Somerton Man,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which is like a really interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
So like...
I feel like I heard something about they maybe ID'd him.
Yeah.
A year back or so.
Yeah. I think that it was definitely in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. So like there's a lot of interesting ones. I personally prefer sort of like... the more mysterious ones versus the, like, this is the brutalized murder of this person.
I prefer spooky, ooky ones yeah. versus, like, oh, this horrendous, vicious, fucking violent crime.
Yeah, same.
Like, I'm not a Jack the Ripper girly.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, to be fair, like, it is interesting,
mm-hmm.
but it is also upsetting. So I prefer the ones that are just like, maybe it was aliens, you know, which is yeah. just like... Sure.
If you can hypothesize that maybe it's aliens, then I'll probably like it.
Yeah. So I do think that they're fun. But yeah, there's a good set of mm-hmm. true crime stories, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Please join us again next week for the real fake car job. Bye.
Bye.